Katy Lynch, it is lovely to see you again. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Let's go all the way back as a starting point to 1997.
It's very far back.
I know, and when Bewitched first came together. Mm-hmm. Now, there was some quandary about names for the group, wasn't there? Because Bewitched wasn't the first choice.
No, gosh, it was the fifth, I think. We were called Desire, then we were called Sassy, then we were called Sister, and then we were called Bewitched, so it was the fourth name. And to be perfectly honest, when it was our producer who came up with the name Bewitched, and at first we were like, huh? Because as you can imagine, with names like Sassy and Sister, we thought we were a bit cooler than that. So yeah, it took us a while to say, yeah, okay, actually, that works for us. And well, it was a good choice in the end.
Now, the first year, 1997, you were in and out of the studio recording and doing loads of promotional stuff before C'est La Vie came out. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that year?
I remember, well, it was probably 96, 97. I just remember us getting together. We were just some local girls who had a dream. And we genuinely, quite naively, just thought we could do it. So let's just do it. Didn't really know what we were doing. But at first, Sinead, Lindsay and I... Oh, sorry, Sinead, Idel and I recorded some music and it just wasn't feeling quite right. We were like, I think we need a fourth person. So we went on the search for a fourth person and a friend of ours knew Lindsay. And we were like, wow, she's stunning. Watched her in a dance class. Then she came in and sang for us. And we were like, yep, you're in our band. We're called Desire. We're on TV on Saturday. How does that sound? She was like, okay. So it was all incredibly innocent. And from day one, we wrote our own songs. We were in the studio. We used to have daytime jobs and then all meet at night time and work out in the dance studios, whether we were writing songs or putting routines together or rehearsing up until about 11 o'clock at night. And then we'd just go back and every day was like Groundhog Day, just trying to figure it out. We didn't really have a plan either. It was just, let's just do it. Would you want to put a band together? Let's start writing songs. Let's start performing. Didn't really have a plan. Didn't know how we were going to take us anywhere. So we just started locally and got a real break when there's a big TV show in Ireland called TX at the time. It's not there anymore. They did a day in the life of the studios. And we were in one of the studios and they just took a little snippet of us and really liked us for some reason and just asked us to go back on the show. So we did, performed, and actually Louis Walsh was on the show. And a very long story, sorry. Louis Walsh was on the show. He kind of seen some kind of spark that we had and he called our first manager, Kim Glover, and just said, there's a bunch of Irish girls, you really should come over and see them. There's something about them. He kind of thought that we might be a one-hit wonder. He passed us over, not really thinking that we'd be that successful, but at the same time, he must have seen some kind of spark to bother passing us over to an English manager in the first place. So she came over, loved what she'd seen, and took us to England. We met with Ray Hedges, who produced our album, and we started writing songs with him for months and months. And we were supposed to be on a development deal with... I'm jumping ahead of myself, actually. We met with Ray, we wrote some songs, and then we had... It was like a tea party with Sony, Epic. Rob Stringer came down and we hadn't even got any songs recorded at that point. We had a couple written. So Rob Stringer came down to this hideous tea party thing. We threw it at, it was like had jellies and ice cream and it was literally like a kid's party and we were just nuts. And I think our producer got jelly thrown on his head and we did stop and sing songs to Rob Stringer, but it was just the most random thing. And I actually just think he thought we were so mad that we were definitely going to be able to pull something off. So he signed us on the back of that. And then we did a showcase for the rest of the... when we did the schools tour with you, we had guitars and stuff. We didn't know what we were playing. We didn't know how to play them. But so that's where we started. And then we did the showcase for the chairman of Sony at the time, who was Paul Berger. And he went, I love them, but get rid of the instruments. You're clearly not playing them. We were like, oh, good. So we felt more comfortable with that because we were like, you're right, we're not playing them. And that was it, really. We were supposed to be on a development deal for 9 months and then we wrote C'est La Vie. And then it just spoke for itself. We went from... I think we were only 2 months into our development deal to suddenly let's run with this whole campaign. And it just suddenly just grew.
What do you think Louis Walsh would have made of you on the X Factor today then, do you think?
I think we'd be laughed at. Do you know what? It's like how we were so ungroomed. You probably remember from the schools tour we did together, we were so ungroomed. We might not have even worn makeup. I vaguely remember, but that school's tour that we started with was just so much fun. And again, we were just so, just think we were really innocent and really naive. We weren't trying to grab this big thing that is the music industry. We were just going from day to day and enjoying ourselves and doing what we thought we wanted to do. And we were so ungroomed, and it was just, there was no styling behind us at that point when we were doing the school's tour and when we were on that Irish TV and stuff. I think that if we turned up on the X Factor, how we turned up on that Irish TV show, I'm not so sure that someone would see through it now. I think they'd be like, oh my gosh, we've got too much work to do there.
The BR&B schools tour kind of put you on the map, didn't it? Because it was the people in the schools, I guess, that bought C'est La Vie.
They really did, but it was grafting. We really grafted at that point. We did the BR&B schools tour, which went on, I can't remember how long it was.
It was about 3 weeks, wasn't it? Yeah.
3 weeks, day in, day out at the schools. Some of them were good. Some of them, the schools were like, get out, who are you? So it was real grafting, and you could see the switch halfway through the schools tour. We started to get on the box and things, and you could see the switch. We used to do schools in the day, under-18s, nightclubs in the evening, and kind of halfway through that little tour, people started to care. So it began with sort of, oh, God, who's this? What is this all about? In our assembly, why are we watching these people, to actually, oh, my gosh, I seen them on the box last night, and there was a real switch. It was funny. But, yeah, it was, BR&B were good to us. It was like, Birmingham was like our second home. They really took us under their wing, and that was BR&B's doing, really. For some reason, they really liked us. We did the schools tour. They played us a lot. We were on the radio a lot. And I think we sold a lot of records in Birmingham. Never mind the rest of the UK.